Moonlight plays on glittering waters as the skyscrapers of the Manhattan skyline glimmer in the encroaching darkness of night. White letters on a black background. Miramax Films. Hanway Films, UK Film Council lottery funded, BBC Films, Screen Yorkshire. UK Film Council, Hanway Films and BBC Films present, in association with To Entertain and Screen Yorkshire. An Akos Films production, a film by Julian Jarrold. A young captain wearing a khaki uniform walks along a grand hall where groups of soldiers are gathered round tables. The captain puts on his peaked cap, covering his neat dark brown hair. In front of him, light floods in through open doors leading to expansive gardens.
If you asked me now who I am, the only answer I could give with any certainty would be my name, Charles Ryder. For the rest, my loves, my hates, down even to my deepest desires, I can no longer say whether these emotions are my own or stolen from those I once so desperately wished to be.
Charles walks over to an ornate stone fountain.
On second thoughts, one emotion remains my own. Alone among the borrowed and the second hand, as pure as that faith from which I am still in flight.
Charles regards the fountain for a moment, then turns round.
Guilt.
The handsome, clean-cut Charles in his 30s stares into the distance pensively. Brightshead Revisited. In a dark room with a porthole, a barber puts a sheet over Charles, who sits in a chair. Delicate-featured Charles now has a bushy beard and moustache. The barber pulls back Charles's head and foams his beard with a shaving brush.
Been away, sir. Anywhere interesting?
Jungle.
Ah, jungle. Explore, are we?
Painter.
So, bye-bye, beardy. Hello, smooth.
The barber leans over him and shaves him with a cutthroat razor. An enormous cruise liner plows through the water under the night sky. Inside, people mill about holding cocktail glasses.
Famous for his impressive architectural portraits, British artist Charles Ryder has taken New York by storm with a series of gripping jungle studies. To own a Ryder is currently the dream of every self-respecting East Coast millionaire.
You must be so proud of him. Was he away long?
2 years, and it doesn't feel like a day.
You must feel positively bridal.
Come, painter, save my life.
Thank you.
Can't even hold a buggering brush. But I know what I like. Lots of colour. Nice and bright.
I see the jungle in your work. It's a metaphor. Not least the metaphysical settings of the chaos, the hardest of things.
Make an effort, Charles. You're not in South America now. You're among civilized people.
The pretty young woman walks off.
I'm so glad.
Charles makes his way through the crowd. He rolls his eyes and lets out a sigh. He leans against a doorframe and takes a drag on his cigarette. He's clean-shaven and wearing a tuxedo. White smoke snakes out of his mouth and billows around his head. He looks across the room. An elegant swan sculpted in ice stands in the center amongst the crowd. Charles catches a glimpse of a young, dark-haired woman. He leans forward with interest, his brow furrowed. She slips off and up a flight of stairs.
Ah, Mr. Ryder, I wonder if I could have that.
Thank you very much. Conversation.
Charles rushes past the guests and bounds up the stairs after the woman. From the gusty deck, the woman pushes through a set of swing doors. She hurries down a grand carpeted corridor, and Charles follows. She sweeps down the corridor, which is lined with mirrors, and makes her way into a hall with tables and couples dancing at one end. She wears a full-length sparkly gold dress with a bow at the back. Charles follows her into the hall. A woman in a long, pale, silky dress sings at a microphone with two dancers in skimpy black costumes in front of her. Charles steps through another set of doors and goes slowly but deliberately down a quiet corridor which is narrow. The woman is in front of him. She walks through a series of doorways. Charles keeps his eyes fixed on her. Charles comes to a halt, staring at her intently. She stops and turns to face him, her dark eyes wide and her lips a scarlet red. Charles smiles at her softly, and she smiles back.
Hello, Charles.
10 years earlier. A man sits in a room scrubbing his shoes with a brush frantically. He chucks a pair of shoes into a suitcase, then places a white shirt into it. The man, a young Charles, places more clothes into the suitcase. Charles gathers other items from around the room. Papers and photographs, paintbrushes, and an engraving tool. He puts them all into his case and closes it. He grabs a painting and a photo of a sculpture and heads out. Charles sets down his luggage by the door of the house and goes into the dining room where an older, bespectacled man eats a bowl of soup. Some light infiltrates the room between heavy curtains. The man, who wears a suit and bow tie, looks up.
You're wearing a coat.
Yes, Father, I am.
Why?
I'm going up to Oxford.
Ah, yes.
His father looks away, raising his eyebrow.
Remind me, what are you taking?
History.
And what allowance have I given you?
£100.
Oh, how very indulgent of me. Mind you, it all comes out of capital. Oh, I suppose this is the time I should give you advice.
Charles looks at him expectantly. His father frowns.
Your mother was always so good at that.
Charles lowers his eyes.
Who's meeting you?
Cousin Jasper offered to show me around.
Cousin Jasper? Most entertaining.
Charles stares at his father bemused. Hesitantly, he turns to leave, and his father continues to eat his soup methodically. In the hallway, Charles dons a hat. He makes his way outside into the daylight and closes the door behind him. Inside, his father freezes. The terracotta and sandy-coloured spires and domes of Oxford. Charles looks around in awe as he walks through the streets. Students in blazers and scarves amble along the streets or ride their bicycles.
Oh, there you are, Charles. This way, please.
The man marches off ahead of Charles.
Come along. As an only child, you will, of course, have much to learn. Though I'm only your cousin, Charles, you must look upon me as a brother. Older, wiser, but a brother nevertheless. Now, it is no secret that our families are not rich in material wealth. Keep off the grass. But I like to think that we riders are, all of us, rich in the striving of minds. Now then, not that way. Clothes. Dress as you do in a country house. Never wear a tweed coat and a flannel trousers. Always a suit. And go to a London tailor. You get a better cut. Protocol. First and foremost, behaving with restraint.
9 adulteries, 12 liaisons, 64 fornications, and something approaching a rape rest nightly upon the soul of our delicate friend Florealis. And yet the man is so quiet and reserved in demeanor that he passes for both bloodless and sexless.
The man and his friend are on a punt.
Sodomites, all of them. Steer well clear.
Jasper scowls. They approach a room.
Treat all dons as you would the local vicar, with indifference. Oh, dear, this won't do at all. You must change your rooms. I've seen many a man ruined through having ground floor rooms in the front quad. People start dropping in, they leave their gowns here and come collect them before hall. You start giving them sherry, and before you know it,
A young man from the punt vomits through Charles's open window.
Look at the state. Come on, we're getting clean. Some
shadow. Charles stares wide-eyed. He scrubs sick from the floor. A man enters carrying bunches of flowers.
Oh, no, sir, stop. You don't clear up after yourself. That's my job.
Sorry, lad. What's all this?
Ah, from the gentleman last night, sir. He just called. Left a note for you.
He hands Charles a large, rolled-up piece of paper, on which is written, in very large handwriting,
I'm very contrite. Please come to luncheon today. Sebastian Flight.
The Lord Sebastian Flight, don't you know? I'm sure it's quite a pleasure to clear up after him. I take it you'll be out to lunch today, then, sir?
Yes, lad.
Charles smiles.
I think I shall be.
Charles walks off. He makes his way down steps, his hands in his pockets, then towards a large archway leading out into a courtyard. In his room, Sebastian takes a small egg from a bowl and starts to peel it. Charles walks along a corridor, bright light filtering in from outside. Charles trots up some stairs. In his room, Sebastian continues to peel the egg. Charles reaches a landing and spots Sebastian through an open doorway. Charles heads in. There's a teddy bear propped up on the chair next to Sebastian. Charles pauses in the doorway.
I've just counted them. There's five each and two over, so I'm having the two.
He glances at Charles.
I'm unaccountably hungry today. I put myself unreservedly in the hands of Dolbear and Goodwin, feel so drugged, I've begun to believe the whole of yesterday evening was a dream.
He looks Charles up and down.
Please don't wake me.
He smiles cheekily.
Do try one.
Thank you.
He takes an egg.
What are they?
Plover's eggs. The first this year. Mummy sends them from Brideshead. We always lay early for her. You would too if you knew my mother.
Charles smiles wryly.
Are you terribly angry with me about last night?
No, not at all. Thank you for the flowers.
Skinny Sebastian beams.
Aloysius, you can't go there. Do sit down.
Sebastian moves the teddy to a seat at the other end of the table, arranging him there carefully. Charles takes a seat.
Tell me about you.
Me? I'm in my first year, reading history. But really, what I most want to be is a painter.
Would you like to paint me?
Sebastian smiles flirtatiously.
Yes. Yes, if you like.
It's so clever of you, knowing what you want. I've no idea what I want. Except to be happy. If I can. Let's have some champagne.
He gets up.
A glass each before the rowdies arrive.
Sebastian, who wears a white suit, takes a bottle from an ice bucket and pours.
You don't want to join the old boys. They're all bloody drag bobs or colleges.
Top me up, will you, old man?
I don't remember you from Eton.
I didn't go to Eton.
Really? Where then? Harrow or Winchester? Rugby? Well, not Charterhouse, I hope.
You wouldn't have heard of it.
Oh.
There are other schools, you know, boy.
Yes. I suppose there must be.
Charles looked down.
My dears.
Hello, Blanche.
Hello, Blanche.
I couldn't get away before. I was lunching with my preposterous tutor. I told him I had to change. Footer.
Blanche grins. He struts over to Sebastian and gives him a kiss on the lips.
Anthony, you remember Charles? From last night? Charles is reading history, but he wants to be an artist.
No.
Why ever not?
Either you are an artist or you are not.
Hear, hear.
They look at Charles. He glances around.
Then I am. Interesting. You have about you a distinct hint of the pragmatic.
What do you want to be an artist for? I mean, what's the point of it? Oh. Why don't you just buy a bloody camera and take a bloody photograph? Stop giving yourself airs. That's what I want to know.
That's it. Going boy.
I don't give myself airs.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And anyway, you haven't answered my question.
Ah.
Come on. Answer. Answer.
Yes.
Answer. 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 Answer.
Sebastian studies Charles.
Because a camera is a mechanical device which records a moment in time, but not what that moment means or the emotions that it evokes. Whereas a painting, however imperfect it may be, is an expression of feeling, an expression of love.
Sebastian eyes him.
Not just a copy of something.
Blanche slow claps him.
Who on earth do you think cares about your feelings?
Yes.
No. I do. Boy, you're an oaf. Behave yourself. To art and love.
He raises his glass, the others copy.
Love and love.
They drink. Sebastian and Charles smile across the table at each other.
We'd just arrived in his rooms. Then, without even a by or leave, the Lord Flight pokes his head through the window and vomits. Ground floor rooms, you see. Poor Charles may never recover.
Morning, Jasper.
Morning.
Charles and Sebastian cycle past Jasper, who's walking along the street with a group of other young men. Jasper stares at Charles and Sebastian, horrified.
Charles! You have to come away at once. I've got a basket of strawberries and a bottle of Chateau Perrier, which isn't the wine you've ever tasted, so don't pretend. It's heaven, the strawberries.
Sebastian, wearing a straw hat with a scarf flung over his shoulders, drags Charles off, linking arms with him. They sit on a punt on the river. They lounge languidly under a tree, Sebastian smoking a cigarette, a picnic hamper next to them.
Just the place to bury a crock of gold. I should like to bury something precious in every place where I've been happy.
Charles listens. Sebastian stares.
And then, when I was old and ugly and miserable...
Charles laughs.
I could come back and dig it up and remember.
Sebastian sucks on his cigarette and looks at Charles, who smiles at him warmly. Little ripples run through the green water of the river behind them, and the shadows of the trees dance on its surface.
Come along, Charles. There's someone I want you to meet.
A motor car drives along a road through fields of wheat. In the distance, a domed roof peeks out over trees. The car speeds down a driveway away from a stone archway. Sebastian drives through the grounds of a stately home. Charles looks out with wonderment as they pass the grand stone fountain.
Is this where you live?
It's where my family live.
Through the trees, they catch a glimpse of an enormous stately home.
Don't worry, you won't have to meet them.
Oh, but I should like to.
You can't. They're away.
Charles continues to look in awe as the building comes into view. A large domed tower reaches into the sky. They pass by the fountain. Atlas holds up the globe in the center, and around him classical figures blow horns. Water spurts from the globe and the horns. The car pulls up outside the house. Charles gazes up at an intricately carved pediment in the center.
Everything's shut up. We'd better go this way.
Sebastian heads through a door to the side of the steps leading to the main entrance. Charles chases after him, and they go down steps under a dingy archway and through a door.
Keep up!
Sebastian glances back as they make their way through passageways to a narrow staircase. Charles looks along a corridor lined with busts covered with sheets.
Charles!
Charles trips on a step. They walk along another corridor. Sebastian knocks on a door, then enters the room.
Well, this is a surprise. Oh, lovely to see you. Oh.
Meet my new chum, Charles. Charles, this is Nanny Hawkins. This is who I wanted you to meet.
I don't think I know you, do I?
How do you do?
Your friend has charming manners. What family are you from, Charles?
No family. I mean, no one important.
Charles is an artist. He's going to paint me.
Surely. Oh, you've come at just the right time. Lady Marchmain's on her way up from London. It's the Conservative women's tea. They always turn out for Brideshead.
I'm afraid we may have to miss them, Nanny.
Your mother will be disappointed. I'm sure her ladyship would want to meet...
Can't be done, I'm afraid. Got to get back or we'll be gated.
Sebastian stands abruptly and leaves. Nanny Hawkins drops a rosary on the floor. Charles kneels to retrieve it and hands it back.
I pray for my dear Sebastian every day.
She peers at him gravely. He stares back.
Charles!
It was very nice to meet you.
He stands and leaves, glancing back briefly into the softly lit room to smile.
Come along, Charles.
Couldn't we just have a quick look?
We've seen who we came for. We can go.
Just a little look.
Sebastian turns back to look at him and Charles hops down the last step. Sebastian glides ahead of Charles down the corridor with the covered busts. He whips one of the sheets off to reveal the carved figure underneath. Charles strides down the corridor after him. They turn a corner. Charles gazes up while Sebastian opens a blind from over a long window, letting light flood in. A painting of a woman holding a baby, surrounded by a gilt frame, is suddenly illuminated. The tall ceiling is painted. There's a frieze in the center with a golden chariot in the clouds.
Don't be such a tourist, Charles. If you're that keen, you can see it all for a shilling on Queen Alexandra's Day.
Sebastian looks up at the painting.
God, I loathe that painting.
Charles steps towards him.
I could show you the chapel, I suppose, if we're quick.
They clamber through a low doorway and up steps. They walk between carved wooden railings into a chapel. Sebastian dips his hand into a bowl of holy water and crosses himself. Charles copies him. They pace down the aisle. Sebastian halts in front of the altar and genuflects. Charles follows suit.
What did you do that for? You're not Catholic, are you?
No. I was just trying to fit in.
Well, don't.
Outside, Charles turns a handle on the front of the car. Sebastian watches.
Come on, come on!
Sorry, I'm afraid I don't have the knack.
What are you doing?
Another car pulls down the driveway towards the house. Sebastian hurries over and desperately tries to crank the car.
Car, now.
They both climb in. Sebastian circles around over the lawn and heads back down the driveway. The other car heading towards them. Both cars create a dust which looks like rising steam in the pale sunlight. The cars pass, and the dark-haired girl Julia looks out of the window at them. Charles looks back and follows the car with his gaze.
Who's that in the car with your mother?
My sister.
What's she like?
For goodness sake, Charles, I don't keep asking you questions about your family.
But I've never asked you anything before.
You're so inquisitive.
You're so mysterious about them.
I hoped I was mysterious about everything.
Why don't you want me to meet your family? Who are you ashamed of, them or me?
Don't be so vulgar, Charles.
They tear down the narrow driveway. Charles looks away.
I'm not having you mixed up with my family. Or my friend.
I don't have a family.
Sebastian turns to him briefly.
You have me.
Sebastian puts his arm around Charles's shoulders, and softening, he glances at him.
Sebastian and Charles. Contramundum.
Charles breaks into a grin.
Contramundum.
They head towards the stone archway at the end of the drive, dipping down on the bumpy road. Sebastian's arm lingering over Charles's shoulder. Charles, with his coat over his arm, enters his house.
Father?
The house is dark. He enters a study.
Father?
His father sits at a desk examining an object.
Back already?
Time's over.
So soon?
His father peers up at him over his spectacles. The two of them sit over a game of chess in the dining room. Charles studies his father, who's poring over the chessboard. Charles gets up to answer the door.
Thank you. Father, I had to leave at once.
Oh, yes?
A great friend of mine has had a terrible accident. I must go to him.
May I?
Charles hands him the slip of paper. He scrutinizes it.
Gravely injured, come at once, Sebastian. Oh, I'm sorry you're upset. Reading this message, I would say that the accident was not as serious as you seem to suggest, or it would not have been signed by the victim himself.
He hands the note back.
Still, of course, he may well be fully conscious, but horribly paralysed. Remind me, why is your presence necessary?
I told you, he's a great friend.
Well, I shall miss you, my boy, but don't hurry back on my account.
His father turns the chessboard. A steam train chuffs along a track, slate grey smoke pouring out of the funnel. The train pulls into a station where an attendant in uniform waits. Another one wheels over a luggage trolley. One attendant helps a man out of first class.
Welcome back, sir.
Charles lets himself out of third class in a beige suit and Macintosh and picks up his briefcase.
Excuse me.
Charles runs out of the station. Julia's waiting for him in a car.
Are you Charles Ryder?
He looks over at her.
Yes. Sorry. Hello.
I'm Julia, Sebastian's sister. I've been sent to pick you up. Hop in, Mr. Ryder.
Charles goes over to the car. Julia's pretty face is framed by a hat.
Case in the back.
He puts his case into the tiny boot of the car. They pull away from the station. Behind them, a man herds some sheep along the gravelly path. Julia's gloved hands grip the steering wheel. Charles notices a gold cross hanging around her neck. She wears a loose white top with blue embroidery. Charles glances around awkwardly.
How's Sebastian?
He's fine.
Fine?
Did he tell you he was dying?
Well, I thought... His message said...
I expect he thought you wouldn't come if he knew.
He's not badly hurt, then?
He cracked a bone in his foot so small it hasn't even got a name.
How did it happen?
Playing croquet.
Charles chuckles to himself silently. Julia observes and smiles.
I must admit, I did think it was a little queer, you travelling all this way for a croquet injury.
Oh, I don't mind. It's wonderful to be here again.
Is it? Why?
Well, such a beautiful house, for one thing.
I can't stand the place.
Charles smiles again, his gaze resting on Julia. She holds out a cigarette case.
Be an angel and light me one.
He takes a cigarette and puts it in his mouth. He leans forward to light it. He puts it in Julia's mouth. He blows smoke through his nostrils, and she smirks to herself. The car drives through the archway into Brideshead. It approaches the enormous grand house. A manservant opens a set of large wooden doors, and Sebastian trundles towards them in a wheelchair.
There you are at last.
I thought she was dying.
I thought I was too. The pain was excruciating. Julia, ask Wilcox to fetch us some champagne.
I hate champagne.
For our guest.
Well, take your coat off. You'll boil.
Charles rests his trilby on his head and takes off his coat. He smiles at Sebastian, who's in his pyjamas.
Come along, Charles.
Charles places his trilby over Sebastian's injured foot. Out on the lawn, Charles pushes Sebastian. Julia walks with them, and three manservants follow them. The manservants carry a bucket filled with champagne bottles as they head towards a stone summer house.
I thought you hated champagne.
I do. I suppose Sebastian's told you all about us.
No, nothing at all, as a matter of fact.
And nor should I.
Inside the summer house.
What?
I take it you're not one of us.
Don't answer.
I don't live like this, if that's what you mean.
She means you're not a Catholic.
Sorry, no. No, nothing at all.
You mean you're an atheist?
Well, yes, I suppose. Strictly speaking, we're C of E, but Father only ever goes for Christmas. And funerals. He likes those.
What about your mother?
She's dead. I was very young. She died working for the Red Cross, which, given her devotion to good, does rather point up the arbitrariness of it all.
I see. So you're here arbitrarily?
He's here as my friend.
Given Mr. Ryder's staunch position on religion, don't you think he ought to know what he's getting into?
Leave Charles out of it.
Tell me.
God.
Mummy takes her faith very seriously indeed. So seriously, in fact, that our fat little priest, Father Mackay, called her a living saint. Mind you, he drinks. Sebastian and I are a couple of heathens.
I'm not a heathen, I'm a sinner. Cast out from God's love. As for you, you're not a heathen at all. Not really.
He looks away.
Why do we always end up talking about family?
He bites on an apple.
It's time for my bath.
She kisses Sebastian on the lips.
Good evening, Mr. Ryder. Look after my brother.
She steps out carefully over a tray of fruit and champagne glasses. Inside the candlelit summer house, Charles moves over to Sebastian, who's leaning against the sofa.
I don't think your sister likes me very much.
I don't think she cares for anyone much. I love her.
She pads over the grass.
She's like me.
Drink. In remembrance of me.
Dusk. Charles runs, pushing Sebastian in his wheelchair. The stroke of a paintbrush over paper. Sebastian drinks whiskey by the fountain. He smokes from a cigarette holder. In a misty light, he's pushed across the lawn by Charles. Charles sketches him sitting at the edge of the fountain. They run on the low wall of the fountain. Charles sketches the house. Sebastian holds a toad in his hand. They play chess. They picnic in the garden. Sebastian's wheelchair tips and he falls out.
That's checkmate.
Inside, they play chess. Sebastian knocks over the pieces.
Come here.
Outside in the grounds...
If only it could be like this always. Always summer. Always alone. Fruit always ripe.
Charles sketches at dusk. Sebastian stands next to him with his arm round his shoulder. They race tumblers by the fountain under the setting sun.
Cheers.
They drink. Sebastian hobbles out to where Charles sits under a darkening sky.
No.
Mm.
They're surrounded by bottles.
Try this.
They sit under a colonnade listening to a gramophone. Sebastian pours Charles a glass of peach-coloured wine and hands it to him. He sips it.
No?
It's a shy little wine, like a gazelle.
Sebastian takes it from him and tries it.
Like a leprechaun.
Dappled in a tapestry meadow.
A flute by still water.
Mm. This is a wise
old wine.
He pours it and hands it to Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian gulps some down.
A prophet in a cave.
And this is a string of pearls on a white neck.
A swan.
The last unicorn.
Sebastian leans forward and kisses Charles gently on the mouth. He pulls back, and Charles gazes at him tenderly, leaning in towards him. Charles turns away. So does Sebastian. Sebastian purses his lips, then sips his wine. Charles sips his wine too. Day. Sebastian and Charles are swimming naked in the large stone fountain. They frolic in the water. They splash each other. A car heads down the driveway towards the house. Charles and Sebastian watch.
Who's that?
A line of servants stand on the steps. One goes to attend to the car, which pulls up beside them.
Is that your brother?
Yes, that's Bridie.
He seems all right to me.
Wait till you meet him.
Bridie helps a woman in a fur cape out of the car.
Mother.
A teenage girl also gets out and the party heads into the house. Sebastian and Charles are in a maze made from hedgerows. They peek over one of the hedges, stark naked, whilst drying themselves with towels. Julia sneaks up behind them.
Hello there.
Go away, we're not decent.
Mummy's here.
We know.
She's invited Charles to dinner.
Julia leaves. Inside, Charles marches down the corridor lined with busts, now uncovered. He wears a beige-coloured suit with a waistcoat and tie.
Not going to help, is it?
Charles eavesdrops.
Has he done him whatever yesterday since? We must all pray for God's forgiveness. Now you try. And try again. Hmm? Be a good boy. For God and for Mummy. Hmm?
Charles watches, his brow furrowed. Lady Marchmain strokes Sebastian's cheek as he sobs.
Put on.
Dining room's this way.
Charles turns sharply. They walk down steps past a painting of the crucifixion.
Sebastian, all right? He seemed upset.
Oh, he and Mummy often have these talks.
Julia wears an emerald green dress.
Flannels for dinner. Very bold, Mr. Ryder.
Will your mother mind?
Yes, she'll be appalled.
She smiles at him.
No, don't worry. She'll be understanding.
Do you often do that?
What?
Say one thing, mean another.
Yes. And no.
She smirks. The house at sunset. Lady Marchmain enters the large dining room. The men and the servants stand as she enters. Sebastian and his brother wear formal white tie attire. Lady Marchmain sits at the head of the table.
Thank you.
The servants help the men to be seated. Everyone bows their heads and puts their hands together.
Benedictus benedicat. Paeism Christum Dominum Nostrum. Amen.
Charles watches everyone cross themselves.
Welcome to Brideshead, Mr. Ryder. I've been hearing all about you. I do hope you didn't let Sebastian call you away in too much of a rush.
I'm afraid I didn't quite have time to pack the right things.
Sebastian must lend you some clothes while you're here. Or perhaps Bridie's a better fit. Are you a Bridie or a Sebastian, Mr. Ryder?
He can't borrow Bridie's clothes. Bridie dresses like a bank clerk.
Don't be vulgar, Cordelia. Vulgar is not the same as funny.
Pigtail Cordelia looks down sheepishly.
I hope you've been looked after properly, Ryder. Has Sebastian been seeing to the wine?
Yes. Sebastian's been seeing to the wine.
Delighted to hear it.
Charles smiles knowingly.
You're fond of wine?
Yes, very.
I wish I were. It's such a bond with other men. At Christchurch, I tried to get drunk more than once, but I didn't enjoy it.
What do you enjoy, Bridie?
Hunting. Shooting. Fishing.
Julia shakes with suppressed giggles.
And what form do your pleasures take, Mr. Ryder?
Sorry, pleasures.
Your hobbies. What do you do to relax?
He drinks.
Drinking is not a hobby, Sebastian. You live in London, is that correct?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
Paddington.
She cocks her head.
You live in a railway station?
No, no. Sorry, no, I live nearby.
Oh, I see. And has this led to an interest in trains?
Bridie looks up. Charles smiles.
No.
So, are you close with Sebastian's crowd?
Charles turns to Sebastian.
Not really.
With Anthony Blanche?
We're acquainted.
Charles is a painter, Mummy.
Lady Marchmain smiles.
How charming. We must get you to paint something for us. Would you do that, Mr. Ryder?
I'd be delighted. I think Brideshead's the most beautiful house I've ever seen.
Charles's face lights up. Julia looks at him warmly.
It's utterly magical.
How kind you are. Summer at Brideshead. Mr. Ryder must stay with us for the rest of the vacation.
As a matter of fact, I've just heard from Papa. He wants me to go and see him in Venice. And Julia.
I see. And do you intend to accept this invitation?
Yes, why not?
What about you, Julia? Will you be going?
I'd like to.
Wouldn't you rather stay at Brideshead?
Lady Marchmain eyes her daughter severely. Charles glances at Julia anxiously. Julia stares at her mother.
Well, yes, if you want me to.
Julia's jaw tightens.
You must not neglect your duty.
No, Mother.
Julia forces a smile. Sebastian's downcast, his mouth drooping at the corners.
I think we might spend a little time in the chapel after dinner. Would you join us, Mr. Ryder?
Thank you.
You do know Charles is an atheist.
Bridie glances up.
An agnostic, surely.
Actually, no.
But you'll join us anyway. Out of curiosity.
Thank you.
They make their way down a corridor. Lady Marchmain has her arm linked through Julia's. The others follow.
No, Sebastian.
No, Mummy. Charles, are you really an atheist?
Yes, I am.
How awful for you. Yeah. I'll put you on my prayer list. I have a long list of people I pray for, including 6 black Cordelias in Africa. It's a new thing. You send 5 bob to some nuns in Africa and they christen a baby after you.
Right.
Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
Charles stands at the back of the chapel, watching.
Salve Regina, Mater Misericordiae, Vita Dulcedo, et Spes Nostra Salve. Ate clamamus, exules filii Heve. Ate suspiramus, gementes et flentes, in hac lacrimarum.
ever been to Venice, Mr. Ryder?
No, I haven't.
Oh, every ambitious young man should visit Venice. It makes one sound more complete.
They stroll by the fountain.
I was thinking, if Sebastian were to go, it might be a good thing if you were to accompany him. He needs someone plausible by his side. I gathered last time he was there, he was befriending some very odd types. It's youthful high spirits, I understand. But in the end, we must all accept God's limits.
Her brows pinched.
Atheist or no.
Lady Marchmain turns to study Charles and smiles. Charles looks ahead, faintly amused.
I know I can rely on you. You seem to me a very reliable young man.
Julia, Bridie and Cordelia trudge after Lady Marchmain and Charles. Sebastian watches them through a window from the house. He gulps from a glass. The city of Venice on the water's edge, vast white buildings with porticos and a tall terracotta tower. A boat glides down a winding canal. A man in a flat cap steers while Charles, Sebastian and Julia sit in the back. Julia holds a parasol.
San Giovanni Paolo.
Oh dear. I can see you're going to be impossibly curious. By the way, I should warn you, our lovely father is rather a scoundrel. He lives in one of the palazzos with Cara.
Who's Cara?
His mistress.
Poor Papa is rather shunned by society. Not the Italians, of course. They adore him.
Charles stands as they pass a tall, domed church.
Santa Maria de Miracoli.
I know. I've seen the postcard.
Julia's attractive face breaks into a wide smile. Charles turns back to look at the views. From the narrow canal, they head onto a wide, sunlit stretch of water. The shadow of a low bridge passes over Julia as she gazes around in admiration. They head toward a small garden on the bank of the canal. A man waits on a bench in the garden. Sebastian runs towards him, followed by Julia and Charles.
My dear boy!
Darling, Papa. You look so young.
You think so? I've taken to playing tennis at the Lido with a professional. Cara thinks I'm getting far too fat. Julia, come here.
Father.
My child, I wasn't sure if you'd come.
Mummy gave me her blessing.
Oh, blessed by your mother. What a saint that woman is. You know, I used to try everything to please her. Julia, this is your friend, Mr. Ryder.
Charles is my friend, Papa.
Oh, I see. Delighted.
How do you do, sir?
Welcome to Venice.
Yes, Cara, now we can eat. Come along now. This way.
Cara calls from a loggia on an upper floor. Charles steps out onto the loggia, which overlooks the water, and across at tall, narrow buildings along the waterside.
Don't look so greedy. It won't go away.
Sorry.
Charles purses his lips, embarrassed. Julia joins him to survey the view.
I wasn't sure you'd come to Venice. Your father seemed pleased to see you.
I'm not sure Father cares much if I come. He'd probably be just as happy if it was only Sebastian. They adore each other. Mm. They're alike in so many ways.
Charles observes her.
Who are you like?
Me? Oh. Nobody. I'm the family shadow.
Charles looks at her and she glances about awkwardly.
Drinks. Julia. Cara.
They go into a drawing room.
Mr. Ryder, Sebastian tells me you are a painter.
Charles is an artist.
Good. Well, then I will show you all the great art of Canaletto and Veronese. He never goes anywhere. Such a philistine.
I don't mind the art. It's religion I can't stand. The Italians seem unable to paint anything half decent without putting Christ dying in it. Of course, your mother loved Italy. A Pietà on every street corner.
Don't be cruel.
On the contrary, she'd be flattered. God was always her first love.
Mommy loves all of us equally.
Come now, Julia.
You were the one who walked away.
Julia looks down, tight-lipped. The pleasant-faced, red-haired Cara shifts uncomfortably.
What must you think of us, Mr. Ryder? A family of monsters, are we not?
No, not at all. I lost my mother when I was young.
Lord Marchmain takes a sip of his drink and looks around philosophically.
Tell me, Mr. Ryder, as an artist, what did you make of Bride's Head?
I thought it was magnificent.
You think that? Really? And now here you are in Venice. What a lot of temptations.
On a beach, the sea glistens under the bright sunlight. Sebastian and Julia amble along the water's edge in their bathing costumes. Cara warmly regards Charles, who's dressed in a red and white striped bathing suit as he paints a watercolour. They look up at Lord Marchmain.
He walks for 2 hours every day. He wants to be immortal. But he's quite fragile, you know. Inside.
She nods at him.
That woman nearly suffocated him.
Charles looks down.
She's been very kind to me.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. But you will see. Just look at her children. Even when they were tiny, in the nursery, they must do what she wanted them to do, be what she wanted them to be. Only then would she love them. It's not Lady Marshmain's fault. Her God has done that to her.
But surely you're Catholic too.
Yes, but a different sort. But it's different in Italy. Not so much guilt. We do what the heart tells us, and then we go to confession.
Cara chuckles to herself and Charles smiles. Julia and Sebastian meander along the beach, their arms around each other.
Sebastian loves you very much, I think.
Charles gazes at Sebastian.
They're very good, these romantic English friendships. If they don't go on too long. For you, it's just a phase. But I think it's more than that for poor Sebastian.
Whispering to each other, Sebastian and Julia look across at them. Charles hangs his head.
Tread carefully, Mr. Ryder.
Charles eyes her gravely, then looks away.
Come on.
Julia and Sebastian run over.
No! No!
They grab Charles and push him across the beach. Of his own volition, Charles begins to run towards the sea. They all scamper into the water. Sebastian splashes Charles and Julia spins around, holding her arms out. They lark about in the shining sea. Sebastian leaps on Charles's back and ducks him under while Julia watches from the shore. Cara watches them pensively, a soft smile playing on her lips. Night, smoking a cigarette, Charles watches Julia from a window. Julia stands by wrought iron gates by the water, in a silk dressing gown with billowing sleeves. She turns and heads away from the water. Charles follows her with his gaze. Inside, Julia sneaks up the stairs. She wraps her gown around her. Charles leans against a wall and she approaches him.
Can't sleep.
Try pyjamas.
Charles is still dressed, his jacket off and a shirt half unbuttoned. Julia heads past, he chases after her.
I enjoyed the beach today. I hope I wasn't too rough.
You were very sweet.
Charles smiles at her. Julia's face remains hard.
Charles?
Charles turns as Sebastian enters.
There you are.
Charles and Julia exchange glances. Sebastian staggers around woozily.
Sorry. Lots to drink.
Sebastian puts his arm around Charles.
I'm so glad you're here. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad.
I'm glad you're here.
You're really good.
Julia closes her doors, watching. They cruise down the canal on a motor launch. There are revelers in costumes with huge masks ahead.
Let's get plastered.
If you want.
Yes, I do. I want.
They're helped off the boat and saunter into the crowd. The light is fading and people are dressed in flamboyant costumes.
Oh, there's a wonderful chapel near here. You will see a masterpiece, I tell you.
Men in red uniforms play the drums. Wiry dog breathes out a long blast of fire. On a stage, a man in a top hat and a mask performs. Another man in a blonde wig and shiny blue coat mimes. Sebastian smokes and puts his arm around Charles. Charles leans towards Julia.
The devil's got his eye on me.
The man in the blue coat pokes out his tongue.
Well, then you must protect me.
Charles looks down at her tenderly. On stage, the devil in the blue coat pushes a man in white tights and an angular gold tutu. Behind them, there's a procession. A person in lavish white robes is carried on a sedan chair. Two rowdy women grab Julia and sweep her along with them. Charles quickly follows, losing sight of her.
Julia!
Sebastian notices his companions are gone and makes his way through the crowd. The procession moves over one of the low bridges which traverse the canal. Charles pushes his way through the crowd. He glances around in the dark. He spots Julia on a bridge opposite. He hurries after her. The women continue to drag Julia along. A man in a black and gold costume leads the way by torchlight as they make their way under stone archways. Julia stops in a dark underpassage by the canal, the reflection of the water dancing on the wall. Charles rushes about frantically, trying to find her.
Julia.
We got lost. All those people.
She puts her hands on his chest and leans towards him. Sebastian makes his way through a narrow alley. He halts, spotting Charles and Julia by the water. Charles and Julia look into each other's eyes hesitantly. Charles leans forward gently and kisses her. Their lips press against each other's tentatively, and Charles puts his arm around her waist. Julia pulls away.
What are you doing?
He stares at her.
What's the matter?
He still stares, his eyes wide with confusion. She hurries away. He follows her, grabs her arm and draws her to him, kissing her passionately. She kisses him back. She puts her arms around his neck, then strokes his cheek. She walks off and he watches her go. She jogs across a balcony. Seconds later, Charles runs onto the same balcony but stops seeing Sebastian. Sebastian, from a distance, stares at him. Charles dashes off in the direction Julia headed. Julia turns off a dark street, and Charles runs up behind her. He looks through the doorway she's gone into. It's a chapel. A woman is praying by an altar, and candles sit in clusters at either end of the altar. Lord Marchmain sits on a chair in the chapel, staring into space. Julia kneels at the altar and starts to pray. Sebastian walks up beside Charles and gazes into the chapel sadly.
The old religion, isn't it?
Sebastian. What happened just now? I never meant you to. If I'd known it was going to happen, I'd never...
Sebastian eyes him sorrowfully.
I don't know what I'm supposed to...
Sebastian presses a finger to Charles's lips. Sebastian heads off alone. Inside the chapel, Julia turns as if to glance over her shoulder. Sebastian slowly paces away, his hands behind his back. Charles looks down and closes his eyes. Julia turns her head to the front. Lord Marchmain continues to stare into the distance. Behind the altar is a painting of the Madonna and Child. Back at home in London, Charles plays chess with his father.
Check. Mate.
His father smiles.
I'm boring you. Perhaps it is dull for you here. You've been enjoying yourself.
I've been in Venice.
Ah, yes, I suppose so. The friend you were so much concerned about, did he die?
Charles looked up, his brow heavy.
No.
Oh, I'm very thankful. You should have written to tell me. I worried about him so much.
In Oxford, Charles saunters along the street smoking a cigarette. He rounds a corner opposite an impressive Gothic building. Groups of students chatter on the street.
Oh, watch out, Sly!
Sebastian!
Charles sprints after Sebastian.
Sebastian!
Leave me alone!
Charles grabs him as he stumbles down a corridor.
Damn, where is he? Bastard.
Who?
Mr. Samgrass.
Who's Mr. Samgrass?
One of Mummy's gang. Fat little Catholic from All Souls. Bastard's been set up to follow me. I wouldn't mind if he wasn't so infernally ugly. God, I feel 100 years old.
Why haven't you called round? I've been worried. I was beginning to think they hadn't sent you up.
Since Venice?
Yes.
Sebastian takes out a hip flask and swigs from it.
Damn, there he is again.
Who? What are you talking about?
Mr. Samgrass, there.
Do you mind?
Mummy's hired him to watch me.
What does he want?
My head on a plate.
Look.
Charles stops him.
If he's bothering you, I can stop.
Dear Charles, always so certain.
Not certain of anything.
Aren't you?
They sit down side by side. Charles lowers his eyes.
Oh, by the way, Mummy's here. She has to talk to you. Probably wants you to spy on me as well.
Don't be like that.
Sebastian drinks again.
Why don't I come round to your rooms later?
I'm not sure I want to see you anymore.
Sebastian gets up unsteadily. He falls back and Charles catches him, propping him up. Sebastian totters off down the corridor at speed. Mr. Samgrass heads down the corridor in his dog collar and black robes. Charles stands and bashes into him.
I'm so sorry.
Mr. Samgrass hurries off. Charles walks off in the other direction, past some choir boys. Charles makes his way up a flight of stairs. He takes off his scarf. He goes into a large hall where tables are set out in rows with lamps on them. Lady Marchmain waits at the end.
So, Charles.
She takes a seat where tea is laid out.
How was Venice?
Venice was fine.
Strange way to put it.
It was beautiful.
Speaking as an artist or a man. I want a word with you about Sebastian. I'm concerned about him. Tea?
No, thank you. Why should I be?
He's drinking too much. You must have noticed. After all, I sent you to look after him.
Yes, I suppose we both drink too much, really.
No, not at all. You drink to get drunk. Sebastian drinks to escape the claims of his conscience.
She looks at him sternly. He stares back.
I do wish I could understand why he's so particularly upset. Ever since he came back from Venice, he's been unreachable. Did something happen there?
No.
You all had a good time?
Yes.
I wonder what it could have been.
Lady Marchmain gazes out of the window.
I hope you didn't let Julia mislead you.
I don't understand.
Oh, I think you do.
She meets his gaze.
Please understand, I would not want you to make yourself look foolish, Charles. Her future is not a question of choice. It is a matter of faith. Where it's simply a difference in upbringing, this I might overlook. But you are a self-proclaimed atheist, and my daughter is destined to marry a Catholic. God commands, and we obey.
She gives a saintly smile.
However, we're forgetting ourselves. We're here to talk about your friendship with my son.
I'm not sure Sebastian wants to be my friend anymore.
Because of Julia? That is all cleared up now. We're giving a ball for Julia's 21st. I'd like you to keep Sebastian company. You came to Brideshead as my son's friend. If you have unaccountably offended him, it is surely not too much to ask that you revisit your responsibilities.
He narrows his eyes.
To him or to you?
To the family. And of course, Brideshead does look particularly beautiful at this time of year.
Charles looks up at her.
Tell me, I'm curious. Since, as you claim, you have no religion, What do you imagine you're doing on this earth?
She regards him with melancholy.
Living my life, the same as you.
But without faith, what could your purpose possibly be?
Charles looks down thoughtfully.
I want to look back and say that I was alive. That I didn't turn my back. That I tried. That I was happy.
Happiness in this life is irrelevant. All that matters, the only thing of consequence, is the life hereafter.
Charles smiles sadly. He looks out of the window of a car as it drives up to Brideshead. A hunting party in full hunting regalia trots through the grounds. A pack of hounds sniff the grass. The car pulls round to the stables and stops in between a couple of riders with their horses. Inside, Charles makes his way up a set of steps and along a corridor. He looks down at the floor, frowning. A large tortoise plods along, its shell studded with jewels. A man in riding gear steps up behind it.
Funny, isn't it? My little present to the family. Rex Martram, how do you do?
Charles Ryder.
Good to meet you, Charles. Heard all about you. We should compare notes sometime. Going on the hunt?
I don't think so.
Wise man. A lot of English blue bloods on horseback. Gotta fit in, though.
He slaps Charles on the back and heads off. Charles smiles, amused. In an untidy room, Charles takes off his jacket and switches on a gramophone.
Who is it?
Charles does some dance steps before walking into the ensuite where Sebastian's having a bath.
It's me. Who could have knocked? I nearly spilt my drink.
I did.
In the bathtub, Sebastian quaffs a drink.
Sit down.
Charles sits on the edge of the bath. He takes a cigarette from a case and taps it. He puts it into Sebastian's mouth. He takes one out for himself, taps the end, and puts it in his own mouth. He lights both the cigarettes. Sebastian stares down woefully. His cigarette hanging from his lips. He rests his hand on Charles's.
If only it could be like this always. Always summer. Ancient history.
Pass me a towel.
Sebastian stands up in the bath, his pallid, skinny form dripping with water. Charles gets him a towel as Sebastian continues to puff on his cigarette. Sebastian takes the towel and climbs out of the bath, patting himself dry.
Where's that damn shirt? You're shaking. What is it? What's the matter? Don't you know, Charles? Why this is hell, nor am I out of it. Sebastian, if I've ever done anything... It's not you. It's me.
Sebastian sits on the bed. Charles offers an arm.
For God's sake. Do stop mooning at me like a great big cow.
Sebastian gets up without aid.
Fine. I'm fine so long as I've got plenty of this.
His drink.
I want you to know that whatever happened in Venice, I'm not in your mother's gang, if that's what you think.
Sebastian eyes him.
I'm on your side. Contramundum.
Sebastian takes a cigarette out of his mouth and smiles cynically.
Dear Charles...
Sebastian puts his hand on Charles's cheek and looks into his eyes.
You're not in anybody's gang. That's always been your problem.
Charles hangs his head and Sebastian walks away. He starts to get dressed. Charles turns to him.
Why are you going on the hunt? I thought you detested hunting. I do. I'm going to leave Bridie at the first covert. Hack over to the nearest pub and spend the whole day drinking.
His white shirt swamps his scrawny frame.
If they treat me like a dipsomaniac, they can bloody well have a dipsomaniac.
Well, they can't stop you.
They can, as a matter of fact.
He pulls on a waistcoat.
By not giving me any money. They've stopped my bank account. I pawned my watch and cigarette case.
That lasted for a bit, but that's all gone now. So, regretfully.
Sebastian, I can't do that.
I thought you were on my side.
I am.
Well, then.
Why don't I come with you? It's miserable drinking alone. We get drunk together, like we used to.
No.
He shakes his head.
I'm past all that. Thanks for the offer.
He hangs a tie around his neck and looks in a mirror.
Well, are you with me or against me?
Charles treads down the corridor lined with marble busts on either side. He slows outside a door and glances back. He peers in. Inside, a maid helps Julia straighten her dress, then leaves. Julia turns, spotting Charles in her looking glass. They hold each other's gaze. Lady Marchmain enters. She holds a strap on Julia's dress up. She looks up, startled, noticing Charles peering through the doorway. Charles backs away and heads off down the corridor. Julia looks down. Lady Marchmain studies her daughter. Nightfall. Inside, guests are gathered in a grand hall, parted so an aisle runs through the centre. Julia enters and they applaud. She wears a white gown with a chiffon overlay, emblazoned with golden swifts. A golden Art Deco-style tiara is placed on her dark, angular bob. Her lips are painted scarlet. She smiles as she walks. Charles drinks her in, glass of champagne in hand. His gaze remains on her as she stops at the end.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to announce, on top of the birthday festivities, the engagement of my eldest daughter, the Lady Julia Flight, to Mr. Rex Mottram.
Charles stares wide-eyed. Julia's eyes flit about. Lady Marchmain kisses her on the cheek. Rex whispers in Julia's ear. Charles observes them forlornly as they head to the dance floor in front of the band. Cordelia grabs Charles's drink from his hand.
Thank you, Charles. I'd love to dance.
Cordelia.
Cordelia drags him onto the dance floor. She wears a white dress, long white gloves, and her hair is worn out. Other couples fill the dance floor. Charles continues to stare at Julia.
Charles? Mm-hmm. I hope you don't mind me asking, but modern art, it is all bosh, isn't it?
Yes, it's all bosh.
Good. Also.
Cordelia glances up at Charles petulantly.
Get a grip, Charles. Rex? Rex, I need a better dancer.
Yours for 5 minutes and no more.
Come along.
Okay.
Rex goes to dance with Cordelia. Charles steps over to Julia, whose face is tense. She looks away. Charles and Julia start to dance, her gloved hand on his back. She stares blankly over the shoulder as they move to the music. Charles is sour-faced.
It's not Sebastian, I don't believe that.
Charles, I can't do this.
When we kissed...
Please, stop.
Why? It was wonderful.
I know.
Charles looks at her wistfully.
I think about it all the time. I have no choice.
She pulls away from him and heads away. Charles walks off the dance floor. Rex glances over. Charles sips a glass of champagne on his own at the edge of the room. Sebastian wanders over, still in his tweeds, and puts his hand on Charles's shoulder. He rubs Charles's back affectionately and puts his hand on his cheek.
Oh, Charles.
Don't!
Sebastian tries to kiss Charles. Bridie rushes over.
Come along, old boy.
I don't want your help.
You're in tweed, Sebastian. This is a war. I got off pride at your worst and wet.
Lady Marchmain and the rest of the crowd stare.
You see what it is.
I hate you all so very much.
Sebastian.
Get off me. You don't care about me. All you ever wanted was to sleep with my sister.
Okay, Sebastian, that's enough.
All right, I'm going.
Sebastian staggers out of the hall. Julia watches him, her brow furrowed. Bridie takes Cordelia's hand, and Lady Marchmain waves at the band. Bridie and Cordelia go over to Lady Marchmain as couples begin to take to the dance floor again. Charles lurks in a corner nursing his glass of champagne. He's hunched over and a dark expression lingers on his face. Lady Marchmain strolls over gracefully and looks at him. He straightens himself and gazes back at her.
Charles. Did you give Sebastian money today?
Yes, I did.
Knowing how he was likely to spend it?
Yes.
I don't understand. How could you be so nice in so many ways and then do something so wantonly cruel? We all liked you so much. I don't understand how we deserved it.
Do you think it's better to make him feel like a criminal, having him watched every second of the day?
But you deliberately helped him to drink.
You're the reason he drinks.
She stares at him.
Not me. All I did was try to give him a little freedom.
No, you just wanted him to like you. You're so desperate to be liked. I think you should leave now, Charles.
Lady Marchmain turns away. Charles looks at her, his green eyes wide. Gradually, he lowers his eyes and steps past her. She keeps her head turned from him, her jaw clenched as she fights back tears. Bridie, Cordelia and Julia have all been observing the scene. They turn away as Charles leaves. Charles pauses in the doorway and turns to glance at Julia, then walks away past a delicate chandelier. Julia's pretty face is etched with sadness. Outside, snow falls and Charles gets into a car waiting for him. The car pulls away from Brighthead in the dark, mellow light emanating from its many windows. Four years later. A blank sheet of paper. A hand guides a pencil over the paper, drawing a curved line. Charles sketches a nude model in a life drawing class. A teacher checks students' work. A woman stirs down a corridor with a pad in her hands. The corridor is lined with sculptures. She stops where Charles is hanging a painting.
Hello there. Would you like me to hold the ladder?
Yes, thanks.
The pretty blonde in a hat and fur steadies the ladder.
I'm Celia Mulcaster, by the way.
They shake hands.
Charles Ryder.
I saw your paintings in the brochure and thought how charming they looked.
Charles climbs down the ladder.
No need to look so gloomy. If I had half your talent, I'd be delirious.
Charles turns to her quizzically.
You can thank me if you want.
Thank you.
She examines his painting, now on the wall.
Would you like me to buy something now?
Smiling cheekily, she turns to him. Charles hurries into his house in London as the rain pours outside. He closes the door behind him, sets down his luggage and takes off his coat and hat. He hangs them on a peg in the hallway. He takes a paper from the side and opens a door.
House is dead.
Charles.
Lady Marchmain.
His father holds a stuffed owl.
Thank you, Father.
His father nods.
I'm so glad your son didn't die of his injuries.
Charles's father shuffles out, raising his eyebrows at Charles on the way and still clutching the stuffed owl. Charles shuts the door. He eyes Lady Marchmain.
Please, sit down.
I'm fine, thank you.
She wears a silky, fur-trimmed cape.
How did you know where I lived?
My driver found you.
The Riders of Paddington are limited in number. I hear you have your first exhibition at the Royal Academy. Congratulations.
I'm sure you're not here to ask me how I am.
No. The last time we saw each other, it's true, I spoke rather harshly. I'm not here to apologize. What I said, I meant. I took you into my confidence and you betrayed me.
Charles frowns.
I do hope you're not asking me to agree with you.
I act only as God directs.
Rubbish. God's your best invention. Whatever you want, he does.
I am not here to argue with you.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
The reason I called was to ask you a favour.
Charles smiles with disbelief.
A favour?
Sebastian's gone missing. He's in a house in Morocco. I'm worried about him. I need you to bring him back.
You banish me from your house. You poison my friendship with both your children. And now you expect me to go begging on your behalf.
There's no one else I can ask.
Even if I were to agree, what makes you think Sebastian would take any notice of me?
Because he cared for you more than he ever cared for anyone else.
She falls forward. Charles steadies her. She trembles close to tears.
All I ever wanted was to see them safe. And all they do is hate me.
She lifts her eyes to Charles, her expression pained and mournful. He looks back at her gravely. She swallows.
I'll be at Brideshead. You may send word to me there.
Driver.
Charles opens the door for her.
Driver!
Charles turns back, his brow furrowed. He goes over to the window where he watches Lady Marchmain get into her waiting car. The rain pours down in torrents. Charles runs out of the room and through the front door. In the back of the car, pulling away, Julia gazes out of the window at him. Charles watches the car drive off. A guide in loose robes leads Charles, in a suit, through a tunnel and onto the streets of Morocco. The narrow street is crowded. Two men fight as Charles walks past. One man hands a live cockerel to another. Another sells large squashes at the roadside. There are stalls and men carrying baskets of fruit and veg. One man leads a donkey through the street. Sunlight streams down through woven shelters. Women wear full, long-length robes and head coverings. A bearded man opens a door to Charles, who enters.
Bonjour, monsieur.
The man nods. Charles goes through a narrow corridor up some steps. He looks into a room. In the centre, there's steam rising from a pot on a stand. Charles goes in. A gramophone sits on a little wooden chest. Charles bends down to pick up Aloysius, Sebastian's teddy bear, from off the floor. Charles looks up to see a man pull himself up with a cane.
I'm looking for Sebastian Flight.
The man hobbles closer to Charles. Charles scrutinizes him.
This is his house.
Who are you?
I'm his friend.
In the local hospital. When you see him, tell him I'm still here.
The unkempt man stares at Charles. Charles walks through a hospital ward with a man in a white coat.
Your friend has got the gripe. One of his lungs is full of fluid. He will recover, but travel with you, not a chance. He's very weak. No resistance. What do you expect? He's an alcoholic. Excusez-moi.
Charles walks through an archway outside with a man in robes. They make their way across a tiled walkway amongst trees. The man leads him through the gardens under the warm sunlight. Charles pushes the branches of a tree out of his way as the man leads him to Sebastian, who's sitting on a wicker chair in the garden.
See, here is your friend.
The man bends down to speak to Sebastian, who turns around slowly to look at Charles. Sebastian's expression remains impassive. Charles sees his hair as now closely cropped.
What the hell are you doing here?
Your mother asked me to come. She wants me to bring you back home. But the doctor said it's out of the question for you to travel.
I wouldn't, even if I could.
I think she's dying.
Sebastian looks up, eyebrows raised. He stares ahead, open-mouthed.
Walk with me. I meant to exercise.
Sebastian links his arm through Charles's and steps along feebly with the use of a walking stick. Sebastian dips his hand into a marble basin of water.
Did you go to my house? Did you meet Kurt?
Yes. I wanted you to know he was waiting for you.
It's rather a pleasant change. All your life you've had people looking after you. To have someone to look after yourself.
They continue walking.
I thought you'd want to go back to Brideshead one day.
Brideshead? You mad? The place would still be full of her.
Sebastian's face sours.
Go within 100 miles of the place.
Sebastian stops and closes his eyes, his face pale.
I need to see it.
He disentangles himself from Charles and sits down on a bench in the garden. He raises his face up to the sun. Charles hangs his head.
I'm sorry.
Whatever for?
Charles sits down next to Sebastian.
Everything.
It's all right. Truly. I ask too much of you.
Sebastian stares ahead peacefully.
I knew it all along, really. Only God can give you that sort of love.
Charles shifts around uncomfortably.
Come home, Sebastian. When you're well enough.
Sebastian licks his lips.
And finish it like this.
This is my life now. I'm happy here.
Charles studies him curiously.
I miss you.
How sweet of you to say.
Sebastian takes his hand.
Dear Charles. It was my fault for bringing you to Brideshead. Run away. Run far away and don't ever look back.
The two of them sit still in the tranquil garden. Charles nods almost imperceptibly. Charles stands up and lays his hand on Sebastian's head. Sebastian seems to relax at his touch. Charles ambles away, his hat in his hand, leaving the puny Sebastian basking in the sun. Charles stares out of a window.
I'm sorry.
He walks away. Lady Marchmain leans against the shutter, her mouth downturned and her eyes full of melancholy. She stares into the distance, the sinews of her neck tensed. On the cruise liner.
You must be so proud of him. What's he away long?
2 years. And it doesn't feel like a day.
Charles makes his way through the crowd. He rolls his eyes and lets out a sigh. He leans against a doorframe and takes a drag on his cigarette. He's clean-shaven and wearing a tuxedo. He looks across the room, then strides off, his eyes staring. He follows Julia down the corridors of the luxury ship, her in the sparkling gold dress. Charles steps through a set of doors and goes slowly but deliberately down the quiet corridor. Ahead, Julia walks through a series of doorways. He keeps his eyes fixed on her. Charles comes to a halt, staring at her intently. She stops and turns to face him, her dark eyes wide and her lips a scarlet red. Charles smiles at her softly and she smiles back.
Hello, Charles.
Charles rolls a door closed in a lamplit room, fixated on Julia.
Did you know I was on the boat?
He pads over to her. She's looking in a mirror.
If I said no, you wouldn't believe me.
She gazes at him in the reflection. She turns to him.
You're married now.
Yes.
They can't take their eyes off each other.
You haven't changed at all.
Neither have you.
She steps closer to him.
How ridiculous.
Yes, isn't it?
They lock in a passionate embrace.
Tell me this is fate.
She undoes his bow tie quickly and he takes off his jacket. She slips the straps of her dress over the soft skin of her shoulders and they kiss hungrily. He removes his shirt and she pulls his vest up over his head. Pressing their lips to each other as they sink to the floor. She sits on top of him and he pulls her down so she's lying over him, the back of her dress open. He runs his hands through her hair as she writhes around on top of him. They sit up again, and he nibbles the nape of her neck, her mouth, her chin, and then nuzzles his head in her bosom. He pushes her back onto the floor roughly, her legs apart and thrusts gently. She holds his face and gazes into his eyes. She leans back, stretching her long white neck. Both of them slow. Julia's head lolls back onto the floor. Lying on the bed, Charles tenderly runs his hand up the alabaster skin of Julia's smooth back. She kisses him, then falls back onto the bed, her raven curls brushing her neck. They stare at each other, and Charles fiddles with the golden chain around her neck. Julia pulls away.
What?
Nothing.
She looks away.
Tell me.
I was thinking about Sebastian. Mummy died without ever seeing him again.
Charles leans back, sighing. Julia turns to him abruptly.
Let's go up on deck.
You sure?
They're all asleep. Come on. Come on.
She pulls him up. They hurry through a corridor. Julia's in a white fur-trimmed coat. Charles wears his tuxedo minus the bow tie. They jog out onto the windy deck.
Sorry.
They pass a man mopping the wet floor and stand at the railings.
So where's Rex?
I drowned him! Forgive me, Rex!
She leans against the railings under the dark sky. Charles puts his arms around her and they kiss. Julia beams at him. Staff are tidying in the hall. Charles and Julia enter from different directions.
Lady Julia, fancy meeting you.
Mr. Ryder.
Could I possibly get you a drink?
Dry martini, please.
One dry martini, one whiskey with water. Please allow me.
He pulls out a chair for her, and she sits down. He sits next to her, smoking a cigarette.
So why did you marry Rex?
Oh, I don't know. Because he wasn't you.
Because he was rich.
Because he was Catholic. Because Mummy approved, God rest her soul. I thought he was my painted savage. It turns out he was thoroughly up to date.
A waiter brings their drinks.
Thank you.
Now, no more talk about Rex. He's in England.
They clink glasses and drink. Charles sucks on his cigarette thoughtfully.
Do you have children?
No.
No. What will you tell your wife?
Wait until London. I have a viewing to arrange. I'll sort it out, it'll be fine. Where shall we go?
Oh, somewhere abroad, like Daddy. What about Italy? Capri?
Antibes.
Seville.
Verona.
Paris.
Brideshead.
No.
Why not? It's the loveliest place on earth.
I can't go back there. Not after this.
Nonsense. We've nothing to apologize for.
No. Besides, Rex is there.
Leave it to me. I'll settle things with Rex.
He smiles.
I'll settle everything.
He takes her hand and pulls her up.
Trust me.
He swings her round.
I do.
And stop worrying.
They dance in the empty hall. He twirls her under his arm. Then they bow and curtsy at each other. The cruise liner plows through the ocean. In a large room in London, Charles and Celia stand together as other people mill around.
Is there Mrs. Ryder?
Look, that's the Duke and Duchess of Clarence. They want to buy one.
How very gracious of them.
He looks over scornfully.
Make an effort, Charles. I've got you the cream of Mayfair.
She flashes a saccharine smile.
Ryder, good day.
Charles.
So glad.
How charming you look.
Dapper, mustachioed Anthony Blanche.
Anthony. I heard quite by chance at luncheon that you were having an exhibition. So, of course, I dashed impetuously to the shrine to pay homage. Where are the pictures?
He looks at one.
Let me explain them to you.
He glides over to paintings of jungle scenes which are hanging on the wall. He studies a smaller one, then a large, bright one.
This is simply charm. A simple, creamy English charm playing tigers. But enough of art. They tell me you are happy in love, and that is everything, isn't it? Or nearly everything. Everyone's talking about it. So it's Julia now. It used to be Sebastian. Do you think I should warn her?
Warn her about what?
How apropos that you should have chosen jungles for your canvas. I always thought you the lamb to be slaughtered, when all along it is they who are hunted. There really is no end to your hunger. Is there, Charles?
Anthony eyes Charles, his expression hard. Charles stares back at him, then looks down. A car tears along the driveway towards Brideshead. Several other cars are parked outside the stately home.
Why do I feel so nervous?
Don't be.
Charles and Julia walk along inside the house.
Who are all these people?
Politicians, money men. Rex thinks there's a war coming with Hitler. He wants to do well out of it. That's all he talks about.
Hello, Julia.
Hello, Rex.
Good evening, Rex.
Mr. Ryder, welcome back to Brideshead. I hear you're making quite a name for yourself.
Could I have a word with you?
Later, I have guests.
Rex, who's dressed in a tuxedo and holds a cigar between his fingers, withdraws from the balcony.
It's cold.
Julia goes over to a large fireplace and wraps her arms around herself. Charles goes to her and leans in towards her.
Not here.
She recoils.
Sorry.
Let's go back to London.
Let me settle everything with Rex.
And then we'll leave. Yes? Charles?
Yes. If that's what you want.
She nods. Charles and Julia stroll into the dining room. They amble past a table, on which there are hundreds of matchboxes laid out neatly, all with different pictures on them.
Hello, Bridie.
Oh, hello, Julia. Just up from London.
Yes.
Welcome back to Brideshead, Charles. How's your family?
Fine, thank you.
Bridie's eating.
Rex, still entertaining?
He's got business.
She sits at the table.
Oh. I'm sorry he's not here. I have a little announcement to make.
Well, come on, out with it.
I'm engaged to be married.
Congratulations, Bridie.
Well, who is she?
Oh, no one you know.
Is she pretty?
I don't think you could exactly call her pretty. Comely is the word I think of in her connection. She is a big woman.
Fat?
No, big. She's called Mrs. Muspratt. Her Christian name is Beryl.
But, Bridie, where did you find her?
Her late husband, Admiral Muspratt, collected matchboxes.
You're not marrying her for her matchboxes, are you, Bridie?
No, no. Matchboxes were left at Falmouth Town Library. I'm just holding them for collection. Why are you laughing?
I hope you'll be very happy.
Thank you. I think I'm very fortunate.
You sly old thing. When are we going to meet her? You must bring her here.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Why not?
Well, you must understand, Beryl is a woman of strict Catholic principle, fortified by the prejudices of the middle classes. I couldn't possibly bring her here.
Charles looks at him.
I don't understand.
It may be a matter of indifference to you whether or not you choose to live in sin with Charles. But on no account would Beryl consent to be your guest.
How dare you talk to her like that?
Julia gets up and walks away.
Bloody offensive thing to say.
Really, there was nothing she could object to. I was merely stating a fact well known to her.
Charles stares at Bridie incredulously, then storms off after Julia. Bridie watches him go, his brow furrowed. He pushes his glasses up on his nose and starts to eat his food again. Out in the hallway, Julia stares up at the painting over the fireplace of the Madonna and Child. Charles goes to her and draws her to him.
Take no notice of him, my darling.
Charles and Julia wait in a study. Rex enters.
Oh. Got you. Sorry about the delay.
I'll be outside.
Julia hurries out. Rex watches her leave. Charles stands and Rex opens the glass doors of a cabinet. There are rows of hardback books stacked inside.
The door? Doors made from all the works of Dickens. I had it installed especially. Want one?
No, thank you.
Julia listens outside. Rex takes a decanter from inside the door.
I know what you're thinking.
Rex smiles menacingly and walks over to Charles.
How vulgar can I get? You want to know a secret?
Rex sits down in a leather armchair.
I do it on purpose. It amuses me to offend their delicate sensibilities.
Charles shakes his head.
So you want to take my wife off me? You know she can't marry a divorcee, right? Against the rules.
At least she'll be free of you.
Oh, she'll never be free.
Don't pretend you've been faithful to her.
Who said anything about faith? I bet you'd love to get your hands on the house, though, wouldn't you? All those pretty paintings. All those pretty views.
Let her go, Rex. You never loved her. The only thing you ever had in common was religion.
Wrong. When I decided to marry Julia, I wasn't a Catholic. I converted before the wedding.
Julia fiddles with her necklace.
Bet she didn't tell you that.
I guessed.
Oh, yeah?
You're the type.
Charles smiles coldly. Rex fixes Charles with a hard stare.
You people.
He shakes his head.
You never learn. You could have had it all if you'd been a little more flexible. I did what I had to do. They want a Catholic, I'll convert to Catholicism. It's a great religion. You sin all you want, then you confess. Problem solved. You gotta woo these people. This family don't live in the real world. They're mortgaged up to the hilt.
Get to the point.
Rex's lip curls and he rises abruptly. He lumbers over to Charles and stands facing him squarely.
You want my wife? Make me an offer. I'm not just giving her away.
Don't do this. It's demeaning.
Try a little harder.
Rex smiles. Charles looks away.
You're a rich man, Rex. You've already got what you wanted.
You could never have enough of what you want.
Rex's lower jaw juts out as he glares at Charles. He turns away and smiles.
Ah, you're right. You're taking her off my hands. That's a favor. I'll tell you what I'll do. You give me a couple of your jungle picks, and I'll give you an annulment. I hear you're worth collecting.
Rex walks over to the cabinet and fills up his glass. He walks back. Charles glowers at him.
Come on, Charlie boy, say yes. You know you want to. You don't have to speak. Just nod.
Outside, Julia's eyes are full of tears. Inside, Charles stares, then his eyes flit from side to side. He gives a slow nod. Rex smiles and nods back, then raises his glass and gulps from it.
I'll have my driver take me to London. He can pick up the paintings in the morning.
Rex puts down his glass and goes over to the door. He pauses at the door.
You know she's mad. Can't even give you children.
Charles glares at him.
Lost the only one we had.
Outside the door, Julia marches off down the corridor. Rex hears a heavy footfall. He leaves the room. Charles goes through a door and walks across a room. He looks around.
Julia?
He walks across the black and white tiled floor. He slows, looking outside. In the distance, he spots Julia dressed in red in the darkness next to the fountain. Charles walks over to her. She stands by the wall of the fountain, hunched over. Charles takes off his jacket.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
It's just a shock.
Shh. Shh, don't.
He puts his hands on her shoulders. She shrugs them off.
I've always known, ever since nursery. I tried to be good. I really did. I tried. I married Rex.
She shakes her head.
All through the backgammon and cigars, I tried. But it's not enough. It's never enough. God had to punish me. So he took my little stool. My child. The girl. With you, I thought I could really and truly be free. But coming back here, it's like a thread, an invisible thread, drawing you back inch by inch, until all of a sudden you're a child again. And that voice inside your head, the one that Mummy planted all those years ago in the nursery, every night in the nursery, filling your head with it. And the voice is telling you, whispering, wicked little Julia, bad little girl living in sin. And here I am again with you, living in sin.
Charles holds Julia's head and looks her in the eyes.
It's over. It's over now.
He kisses her on the forehead as she sobs. Morning. Charles, followed by two manservants carrying cases, strolls out of the house and down the steps. Two more servants stand on the steps.
Everything set?
That's everything, sir.
Thank you, Wilcox.
Best of luck, sir.
Wilcox shakes Charles's hand. Charles climbs into a car where Julia is sitting and the manservants load the cases onto the back seat. Julia stares at the grounds of Brideshead and the stone fountain where Atlas holds up the globe. They drive away. Julia smiles happily. She turns to Charles, then looks away as a car comes down the driveway towards the house.
Who's that?
Julia sees Lord Marchmain and Cara in the car.
Go back. Turn around, I have to go back.
She cranes her neck to look over her shoulder.
Yes, sir.
Come on, quickly now.
Charles reverses the car and the servants come out.
I'll help with that.
Well, hurry. Hurry. The sedan chair.
Very gently, very gently.
Hurry. Come along, come along.
Hurry, I'm careful.
The rug.
Lord Marchmain's carried on a chair. He has a nebulizer.
Gently. But I have a medical bag.
A flurry of servants attend to luggage.
Father.
Oh, dear Julia.
Come on, please. Come on.
Lord Marchmain is carried into Brideshead. He glances around. Bridie watches as he passes with his entourage.
I'm sorry, I was too cool. We have been traveling without a stop for 3 days. It was Cordelia. She was visiting us in Venice.
What happened?
We want the bed ready as soon as possible.
His heart. Some long word. That's heart.
Hurry up.
He's dying. He has come home to die.
When to my family, she said.
Julia's open mouth. Charles walks in. He looks over at them.
Come along. Let us get Lord Marchmain to the great dining room.
Lord Marchmain lies on a large bed with his eyes closed. Julia's with a nurse by his bedside. Charles, Bridie and Cordelia wait in the room next door.
Thank you.
Julia steps out with a grave expression.
He's sleeping.
Cordelia glances at her.
Do you think we should let Sebastian know?
You could, but I doubt he'd come. The last I heard of him, he's still struggling, rather. The monks have him as a porter in the hospital in Morocco. He seems to like it. I think they've rather taken him under their wing, dear old thing. Still, salvation of a sort.
Her eyes dart around.
Bridie, you need to call for a priest.
Bridie nods.
I'll have a word with Father Mackay about dropping in this evening.
Julia, your father doesn't want a priest. All he wants is to die in his old home.
Our father's soul, all sinners' souls, face mortal danger. It is our duty as Catholics to see that we do all in our power to save those we love from themselves.
Bridie walks out past Charles, and Julia walks away from him. Charles closes his eyes briefly. In the grounds of Brideshead, classical-style statues stand silhouetted against the blue sky. Inside, in a dimly lit room, Lord Marchmain lies in bed. In the same room, Charles paces. A nurse in uniform dozes in a chair. Lord Marchmain grabs Charles's arm. Lord Marchmain smiles.
Hateful woman. She wants me dead.
He eyes the nurse.
What about you? Do you want me dead?
No.
Charles smiles at him fondly and Lord Marchmain smiles back. He releases his grip on Charles, who sits down on a chair by the bed.
You know the family are sending for a priest. They seem determined to drag God into it.
Why should you care?
Charles frowns.
You don't believe in God. You said so yourself.
Have you suddenly become my conscience?
I've already seen Sebastian ruined by God. I don't see why I should watch it happen again. With your daughter.
How very caring of you. You forget I was there. I watched that woman crucify my son, little by little, and I was silent. What'd that say about me?
You're not responsible for what she did.
But are we not also our brother's keeper? You, Charles, and me.
Charles lowers his eyes.
I let Sebastian down.
Lord Marchmain's lower lip quivers.
I let everyone down.
Charles raises his eyes again. A manservant shows a priest into the house. Bridie walks in, followed by the priest, Cordelia, and Julia.
Oh, dear, no, that's too many.
Papa.
Your father needs to rest.
Oh, get him away.
I've brought Father Mackay to
get him away. Get him away!
Out! Everybody out. Out. Out!
I'm so sorry, Father.
Not at all. Give him time. I've known worse cases make beautiful deaths.
Julia stands next to Charles. She fidgets and opens and closes her mouth.
What were you talking to my father about?
He doesn't want a priest.
Please, Charles. Please don't interfere with matters that don't concern you.
Julia.
Julia stares at herself in a mirror.
Let's get out of here. We'll go to Italy. Capri.
I can't leave now. My father's dying.
When this is over, I can make you happy.
He places his hands on Julia's waist. She turns to face him, her eyes closed, and nuzzles against him. She opens her mouth and they start to kiss.
Why should I believe you?
Believe me.
You just bought me from Rex.
She looks at him searchingly. He stares back at her.
What are you talking about?
According to you, I'm worth two pictures. I thought I'd fetch at least three.
Don't be ridiculous.
He walks away.
That was Rex.
You agreed to it, Charles.
I had no choice.
You agreed.
I thought I was doing the right thing. I thought I was doing what you wanted.
No, you thought you were getting me and the house together.
Is that really what you think?
You tell me, please, tell me. What does Charles Ryder really want?
She scowls at him. He looks back at her. Their eyes are locked. Charles's jaw slack. Finally, he steps away. Julia studies Charles, who stands in the corner of the room smoking a cigarette.
Can you imagine what it was like for me to be invited into Brighthead?
He looks over at her.
Me.
He sits on a stool.
Charles Ryder. A painter from Paddington, as your mother so sweetly put it. There was no humiliation I would not have endured just to be part of that dream. And your mother. That woman was more alive now than she ever was. She's in every brick, every stone, every slate.
His glassy eyes stare into the distance pensively.
Sebastian was right.
He stands and strides over to Julia.
We should run away.
He caresses her cheeks and her neck.
Why did you bring me here?
We can still leave.
He leans his forehead against hers and kisses her softly. An ominous cloud floats over the grounds of Brighthead. A peacock displays its tail feathers. Lord Marchbane lies in bed in his room. He breathes through apparatus. In her room, Julia awakens, her eyes widen. Julia sits up. The nurse springs into action, going to Lord Marchbane's bedside. Outside, a figure hurries through the grounds. Inside, Julia looks through a doorway at her father, fear in her eyes. Marching along a corridor, Charles sees Bridie and the priest heading towards him.
Bridie, don't interfere, Charles.
Charles stops and turns to watch them walking away. He glowers at them. He makes his way up a flight of stairs. He walks over the Juliet balcony with curlicued railings. He goes through the open double doors into Lord Marchbane's bedroom. The priest is there, performing a ritual, while the family kneel in prayer around the bed.
Now, try and remember your sins, and tell God you're sorry. I'm going to give you absolution now. And while I'm giving it, I want you to tell God you're sorry you offended him, and then I want you to make a sign, if you can.
Charles watches.
Misericors tui omnipotens Deus, et dimissis peccatis tuus, perducat et tu et vitam aeternam. Amen.
Amen.
Dominus nostro Iesus Christus te absolvet, et ego auctoritate ipsius te absolvo ab omni vinculo excommunicationis et interdicti in quantum possum et tu indigis. Diende ego te absolvo et peccatis tuus. In nomine Patris, et Filis, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
The priest puts down his prayer book and closes Lord Marchbane's eyelids. Julia prays earnestly at the end of the bed. She bursts into tears. Cordelia prays fervently. Charles watches the scene. The priest waves his thumb over Lord Marchbane's lips. Lord Marchbane waves his right hand feebly. Julia breathes a sigh of relief. Cordelia sighs heavily as she watches her father. Lord Marchbane raises his hand with great effort up to his head, his hand shaking. He touches his forehead, then lowers his hand vertically and touches his chest, then to the left, then right, making the sign of the cross. Mm-hmm. Julia watches her father intently, then turns to Charles and smiles. Charles gazes at her, his brow furrowed. Julia beams at Charles, though tears well in her eyes and her chest heaves with sobs.
De profundis clamavi ate Domine.
Domine exaudi. Charles wanders out of the room. Auris tuae intendentes invocem deprecationes mea. Julia treads across the hallway hesitantly. Charles is standing in front of the painting with the Madonna and Child, engrossed in it. Julia stands next to him.
Sebastian used to loathe this painting.
Daddy gave it to Mummy as a wedding present.
Julia looks up at it.
Tell me.
Charles cocks his mouth at the side.
I wanted too much.
It's nobody's fault.
But you're not coming with me.
She turns to him, her expression a mixture of warmth and sadness.
I can't shut myself off from his mercy. Can you understand that?
I don't want to make it easier for you.
He turns to meet her eye.
I hope your heart breaks.
Her eyes fill with tears and she swallows.
But I do understand.
He turns back to the painting.
I have to let you go.
Julia nods tearfully and purses her lips. She smiles gently. Julia turns and walks away. Charles remains in front of the painting, the baby in Mary's arms, surrounded by the carved frame with gilt laid over it. There are two busts and a statue over the painting. Now they're covered, and soldiers go up and down the stairs carrying equipment. Soldiers lean against the curlicued railings of the Juliet balcony. Others are round a table through the double doors of what was once Lord Marchmain's room. Soldiers are covering the various busts and statues with sheets.
Whether by fate or the divine ironies of some higher power, I find myself returned once more to Brideshead.
Three soldiers drop a huge sheet over the painting of the Madonna and Child. The uniformed Charles watches. He turns away, clutching his cap in one hand.
Did I want too much? Did my own hunger blind me to the ties that bound them to their faith? Am I only now shadowed by war? All moorings gone. Alone enough to see the light.
Charles walks out of the main entrance. Army tents and trucks clutter the lawn. A corporal salutes Charles on the steps.
First place we've struck yet. No facilities, no amenities, and the nearest village is a 5-mile walk. Mind you, there's a rumour of a big push coming. They'll be shipping us off to France soon.
Yes, very soon.
Charles takes a cigarette.
Where are the family now? Does anyone know?
Some lady Flight lives on her own here normally. She's overseas with the woman service. Elder brother died in the Blitz. They're all Roman Catholic.
I take it you're not religious, Hooper.
Me, God, no. Can't see the point in it. You're born, you live, then you die.
They head towards the great stone fountain.
Do you have any hopes for the future, Hooper?
I hope so, aye. Plenty. It's our time now. You watch. The old ways, all this, they're gone. Future belongs to us, so long as we don't get shot. How about you, sir? You got someone special waiting for you?
Me? No. I've loved and lost for more than one lifetime.
Do you like me to drive you back, sir?
No, not yet. Carry on, Hooper.
Very good, sir.
They salute each other and Hooper leaves. Charles looks at the now disused fountain, sticks and detritus where there was once water. Charles perches on the side of the fountain. Charles pushes open the door and the carved wooden railings to the chapel. He stops and looks around. Charles dips his hand into the bowl of holy water. A pale light streams through the stained glass windows of the chapel. Charles saunters to the front and stops in front of a statue of the Madonna and Child. A candle burns in front of it. Flashback. A gaunt Sebastian sitting on the wicker chair in the garden in Morocco. In her room, Julia spots Charles from his reflection in the mirror. She turns to him. In the chapel, Charles reaches out to the candle, his thumb and forefinger poised to extinguish the flame. He hesitates, then gently lowers his hand. The flame burns on. Charles scrutinizes it through narrowed eyes, then turns and ambles away. A blurred image of the uniformed Charles making his way through a passageway out into the light, his form silhouetted by the bright light. Soldiers march past the end of the passageway. Light intensifies to a bright white light, then fades to black. ITFC audio description written by Alice Sanders was read by James O'Hara. Directed by Julian Gerald. Produced by Robert Bernstein, Douglas Ray, Kevin Loder. Screenplay by Andrew Davis and Jeremy Brock. Based on the novel by Evelyn Waugh. Executive producers David M. Thompson, Nicole Finnan, Tim Haslam, Hugo Heppel. Line producer Rosa Romero. Co-producer, James Sainer. Director of Photography, Jess Hall. Production designer, Alice Normington. Editor, Chris Gill. Costume designer, Imani Mizeldomnai. Hair and makeup designer, Roseanne Samuel. Music by Adrian Johnson. Casting by Priscilla John, CDG. Cast in order of appearance. Charles Ryder, Matthew Good. Hooper, Thomas Morrison. Ship's Barber, David Barras. Celia Ryder, Anna Madeley. Lady Guest, Sarah Crowden. English Lord, Stephen Carlyle. American Professor, Peter Barnes. Julia Flight, Haley Atwell. Mr. Ryder, Patrick Malahide. Cousin Jasper, Richard Tavison. Anthony Blanche, Joseph Beatty. Sebastian Flight, Ben Wishaw. Lunt, Roger Walker. Boy Mulcaster, Mark Field. Oxford student, Mark Edel Hunt. Nanny Hawkins, Rita Davis. Bridie Flight, Ed Stoppard. Lady Marchmain, Emma Thompson. Cordelia Flight, Felicity Jones. Wilcox, Jeffrey Wilkinson. Lord Marchmain, Michael Gamble. Cara, Greta Scatchy. Mr. Sangrass, James Bradshaw. Rex Mottram, Jonathan Cake. Kurt, Tom Vlashiha, Dr. Henri, Stefan Kornikard, Nurse Susan Brown, Father Mackay, Niall Buggy. Music performed by the BBC Philharmonic, conductor Terry Davis, leader Yuri Toczynski, piano soloist Jonathan Scott, cello soloist Peter Dixon. Score recorded at Studio 7, BBC Manchester. Recorded by Rupert Coulson. Assistant Engineer Mike Horner. Songs and music mixed at Air Lyndhurst Studios. Songs and music mixed by Nick Wallich. Assistant Engineers Chris Barrett, Jake Jackson. Music orchestrated by Terry Davis, Adrian Johnson, David Furman. Score and parts preparation, Colin Ray, Mike Hornet, Roger Turner. Music coordinator, Catherine Manners. Musicians contractor, Isabel Griffiths. Music editor, Sophie Cornett. With the rumba playing, music and lyrics by Terry Davis, violin, Chris Carrick, guitar, John Etheridge. The Temperaments from Personae by Ezra Pound, courtesy of Faber & Faber Limited, UK and New Directions Publishing Corporation, US. With thanks to the Honourable Simon Howard and his family and staff, Caroline Worley and family, Amy Gill, Richard Wigley and everyone at the BBC Philharmonic, Kerry Putnam, Kristen Jones, Lucas Webb, the President and Fellows of Magdalen College, Oxford, and Mark Blandford Baker, the Bodleian Library, the Dean and Scholars of Christ Church, Oxford, the Warden and Scholars of Merton College, Oxford, the Rector and Fellows of Lincoln College, Oxford, the Steward and Fellows of Exeter College, Oxford, Eltham Palace and English Heritage, Film London, Lancing College, Ham House and Garden and the National Trust, the Royal Academy Schools and the Royal Academy of Arts, London, Thomas Agnew and Sons, Brad and Kitty and everyone at Duck Lane. Very special thanks to Paul Ritchie. Filmed at Castle Howard in North Yorkshire and on location in Oxford, London, Venice and Marrakesh. No animals were harmed during the making of this film. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The story, all names, characters and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings and products is intended or should be inferred. Supported by the Screen Yorkshire Production Fund. Made with the support of the National Lottery through the UK Film Council's Premier Fund. And a Cos Films production for Miramax Films, UK Film Council and BBC Films. Copyright, Brideshead Films Limited/UK Film Council/BBC.